TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
That's right, everyone. Use your head while listening to TheChairShot.com. Hello, friends. This is your good friend. Lots of friends. Everybody's friends today. Patrick O'Dowd here, joining you along with his good buddy, David Ungar, to welcome you into another edition of Musical Chairs. Season 4 kicked off last week. Dave and I going in wildly different directions, as we are wont to do. It's always a lot of fun. But that's the appeal and the joy. Right, Dave? I'm going to make you talk, as you look all puzzled at your monitor and screen. Are you okay?
I'm okay. It's just the equipment is not
cool. You sound okay now.
Yeah, the equipment wants to funnel everything through the right channel and not give us much love on the left side, which will make this sound really kind of weird from a post-production standpoint. It'll get equaled out a little bit, but yeah. Anyway,
we'll figure it out.
It'll get better as we go along. I'm sure of it, I think. Maybe. Possibly.
Okay. I mean, I also record the show as well. I could send you my file. I don't know if it'll make a difference, but if you're not liking what you're hearing, let me know. We laid this down on a Sunday. It drops on a Tuesday. There's some time. There's always time. Hell, it's not like I'm going to be recording a pod with Greg DeMarco on Tuesday. Jeez.
Does that ever happen anymore?
It does. It just happens sporadically. He'll be on dance duty. I'll have something like, I just don't want to, you know, stuff like that. Well, I am. I'm old man yells at cloud in wrestling right now. So, no, I'm gonna talk one brief moment of wrestling, because when I'm wrong, I'll say I'm wrong, even when it comes to AEW. And I was very critical of how they brought Mariah May into AEW and what they did with her in the immediate aftermath. I feel comfortable in saying I was wrong and can appreciate the booking direction that they took with her turning on Toni Storm the way she did after winning her tournament. Hi.
Okay.
Nicole.
My bigger question for you is, do you care?
I don't particularly care, because right. I don't watch AEW, but that's a good story. I can agree that it was a good story.
It was, but I mean, you know, the AEW stands out there calling this the greatest heel turn of all time, and I'm like, Sean Kick and Marty,
seeing Hulk Hogan, even when you all knew it was coming. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that stuff today. We're here to talk about music. It is Musical Chairs. It is season 4. It is 2 episodes in a row. Before I break to Dave right now on this episode, I can't be here next week, so you might be able to call in DJ and see if DJ wants to do an episode.
We might have to talk after the episode, because this might be one of those conundrums where we both might be out. I'm not sure, but we'll talk. We'll talk privately.
The little guy has a birthday party in Connecticut that we're going to, and it's like a 5-hour event. Like, it's like this whole to do. So I am making it.
That sounds fun, though.
Could be. Hoping we can drag the misses for this amount of time. Like, let's bring everybody if we're going to do this deal. But last week, a lot of fun on the show. I covered the Beach Boys, and I've already forgotten who you covered, because, you know, I'm more important. Just kidding.
I covered Suicidal Tendons.
I'm kidding.
We should give a shout out to DJ. He did indicate that he was going to throw the podcast in his rotation.
The show.
Yeah. Yeah, and he actually asked me in the Big Four chat. He said, "Hey, can you send me the list of all the bands you've covered?" It's like, funny you should mention that, because I just sent it to Patrick the other day. Here you go.
Because every year I forget. Like, I'm old. I may have it on my notes app somewhere. I'm sure I have it on my notes app somewhere. Like, all the I still have the list of what Connor and I did when we did our 4 parks in one day. List. I got that.
It's important.
It is. It's the, you know, things to keep forever. But okay, so 2 bands again this week. We've hit the prerequisite 5 minutes, so I don't need to talk to you. I do want to talk to you at some point about my big contract decision, as I fully committed to the altar of the mouse. You already know this.
Oh, yeah, right? That. I'm trying to get you to buy Pee-wee's house for $5 million, but you know.
No, I'm not into that. No signing bonus, though, for entering into the contract. Yeah. But, yeah, kids, your Uncle Patrick has gone full on. I was a Disney adult. I've now taken the next step in the cult, as my family and I are going to join the Disney Vacation Club and just give them our money like every month, annually, on a contract so that we can use points to spend there. But, Dave.
I do it myself. Eventually,
look, because here's the thing is, you're always trying to get me to come to Magic Kingdom and do the Magic, Disneyland and you know, all that. As a member of Disney Vacation Club, and once we actually get our contract to the points that we want it to be, I could go stay at a Walt Disney Resort. They take Disney Vacation Club points if the availability's there. That Disneyland trip might finally happen.
They do have a few nice hotels on property, so
they do. Yeah, I'm not doing the Grand Californian, but it might be that I can only do the Grand Californian. I don't know. Anyway,
that's okay. Either here. That's the best of the bad.
Right. It's like the Grand Floridian. The Grand Floridian is what they consider their most posh. I don't know. I actually kind of enjoyed our time at Wilderness Lodge, but this isn't a Disney podcast and nobody cares. I've already forgotten. Did I go first last week?
You go first this week.
I go first this week. So I'm very excited to do that. And we actually, you know, we have two commercials. We've hit our 5 minutes. We're going to take our first commercial break and then I think you're going to like what I've chosen this time around, Dave. Not that you didn't like the Beach Boys.
I love the Beach Boys.
But we're going to talk about another career in music that has spanned multiple decades. We are going to discuss a highly decorated, award-winning musician. And I'm very excited to talk about this. And I think you're going to get into it just as quickly as I am. Before we do that, let's take our first commercial break. When we come back, we'll see if I'm right. We'll see if Dave is excited as I am to talk about my selection for this week's edition of Musical Chairs on the other side of the break. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But DC politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to Musical Chairs here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of TheChairShot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Patrick O'Dowd, David Ungar, talking some music. And as I said before the break, Dave, I'm really excited. I approach musical chairs in a couple of different ways. So every time I do this, there's a few artists that I have that I'm like, I know these are artists I want to cover this season. And then there are artists that I kind of pick on the fly the week leading in, just kind of where my mood takes me. And maybe it's just where I am in the whole like Disney adult sphere, but I started being like, you know, what if I did somebody who did, you know, a lot of Disney movies, and Disney soundtracks and Disney work. And I initially was going to go with Alan Menken, who was involved with The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast and sort of took Disney animation to Broadway. But there's another guy, who is released albums in popular music dating back as far as 1968, who is well known for his relationship with the Disney Pixar company and providing soundtracks to multiple classic Disney Pixar films. And this week we're going to talk about Randy Newman. Huh. Randy Newman.
I thought you were going in a different direction.
No, Randy Newman. And here's the thing that's fascinating. So I like Randy Newman and a lot of his music, and most people know him as a guy who does music for a lot of film scores. And in fact, if you look at his Wikipedia and the number of movies that he has done the music for, he did music for The Three Amigos, for Parenthood, for Awakening, Maverick. He did, then you start getting into the Pixar movies. Of course, everybody knows about his work with Toy Story. He did the soundtrack for the score for Pleasantville, Meet the Fockers, Leatherheads, Cars, he was involved in The Princess and the Frog, for obvious reasons. But before then, concurrently, he also produced his own albums and had his own music that he was releasing and had big hits in the late 60s. His first album was released in 1968, a self-titled album. But, you know, known for songs like Short People from 1977, I Love L.A. from 1983. Other artists covered his music and turned him into hits. Three Dog Night, for example, took his tune Mama Told Me Not to Come and made a huge hit out of it. Other artists covered his tune I Think It's Going to Rain Today and You Can Leave Your Hat On. Like, he's a singer, he's a songwriter, he's a composer and arranger. And then, of course, you get into his music from Toy Story, the music he did for Cars, the music he did for all of these Disney Pixar films. You know, everybody knows You've Got a Friend in Me, like from a Toy Story. Like that, I mean, that won an Oscar. But, you know, Toy Story, A Bug's Life, Toy Story 2, Monsters, Inc., Cars, Toy Story 3, Monsters University, Cars 3, Toys, you know, so there's some trends there. But all of his music, like a lot of his music, when you look at what he wrote as a musician on his own doing albums, are very strongly, like, people are like, oh, they're full of Americana and all this. Yes, but it's also a lot of very cynical looks at Americana and a lot of very pointed, you know, songs about America and the state of America. And he was so much more. He's kind of been made into a parody of himself, or made into a parody by a lot of comedians and stuff. Like, they'll have some dude sitting at a piano just sort of scatting around and making fun of what he does. But he was very much like a man looking at the world around him and literally just singing about what's in front of him. And he's kind of brilliant. And I don't know that people really give him the credit that he deserves because they know him as the Toy Story guy. So Randy Newman, that was my choice.
Yeah, that's
a surprise.
Yeah, it did surprise me when you started talking about, you know, I was thinking of somebody else, but
who are you thinking of?
Well, some of the stuff you were describing, I was like, is he going with Elton John? Is he going in that direction or something like that? But
but Elton John only did The Lion King. That's about it.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking he did more than that. Who knows? I think when I think of Randy Newman, I think of I Love L.A. because, you know, being out here where I am, it's a big deal. The Lakers and all that kind of stuff have adopted that as one of their theme songs. I do remember Short People, where, you know, I'm not sure you get away with that nowadays, but, you know, it is what it is. I think of him more of as like a songwriter than a performer, I guess, because like you've said, so many of his stuff has been adapted by other people and turned into their own things or their own takes on things that he's done that. That's pretty cool. You are right. He without him, yeah, Toy Story is all Randy Newman, and he's got that distinctive voice and you know, the things he's done with Disney and Pixar are really, really important. So yeah, I don't have a lot to add. I never really thought of him.
So so here's the thing that's kind of nuts. So Newman has been nominated for 22 Academy Awards. He's only won twice, which is crazy. Best Original Song in 2002, If I Didn't Have You, from Monsters, Inc. And again in 2011 for We Belong Together in 2000 and Toy Story 3. He's received 3 Emmys, 7 Grammys, and the Governor's Award from the Recording Academy. He was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2002. 2007, he was inducted as a Disney legend. 2010, he received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2013. 2014, he received a Max Steiner Film Music Achievement Award and performed at the annual Film Music Gala Hollywood in Vienna for the first time together with his cousin David Newman. And between he and his cousin, they're like the most nominated family for like music awards. They've been nominated something like 90 some times. Like it's ridiculous how good he is.
He's
Reading
about how he was involved with Farm Aid, Louisiana, 1927, yep, after Katrina came out, which was like kind of sort of a rallying cry for the city of New Orleans, along with the Saints, of course. But yeah, it's interesting. What do you? I know you're going to give us two gems here. So
I'm going to tell you. The first song I'm going to give you is my first introduction to Randy Newman, and I didn't even know it was him. One of my all-time favorite comedies, and for many of us out there in our generation, and I think amongst the bandwagon included, is the movie Major League. Major League is right up there with Bull Durham. It's just two of the funniest movies about baseball, like ever. The less said about Major League 2 and 3, the better. But Major League was scored and soundtracked by Randy Newman. And yeah, and it's funny. Go back and just listen to the music. You're like, huh, how about that? But the opening song is, I love it. It's so beautiful. And it's very quintessential Randy Newman. It's called Burn On is the name of the song. Burn On. And it's about the city of Cleveland. And the opening credits of this movie, Burn On is playing. And it's just about, like, just getting more and more sad as things are going on. And they're showing the fall of the Cleveland Indians from grace. And this is what I talk about when I talk about, when you talk about, like, quintessential Randy Newman. He sings these songs that sound very, like, have that, like, that sort of jazzy sort of, you know, that single piano background. And you think they could be happy. And then you listen to the lyrics. And you're like, oh, man, it's kind of rough. He does that a lot.
Well, like, I Love L.A. is a lot of people interpret it as very pro LA and a lot of people interpret it as very anti LA. And Randy's been kind of ambivalent about what it really means. So,
and my next tune, I did do one Disney song that he did. I did not do You've Got a Friend in Me, which is, you know, everybody knows that song and love it. I actually went to Toy Story 2 and he doesn't perform this song. Sarah McLachlan does. And when you play it, you play the Sarah McLachlan story. But it's When She Loved Me. And it's about Jessie being abandoned by her owner. Horribly sad when you sit there and you listen to it, because it's all about, like, this hope that someday, like, her person is going to remember her. And she talks about, like, how great life was and they were always together and inseparable. As the girl who owns her is growing up, she grows up and she forgets about Jesse, and Jesse falls under the bed and is forgotten until her owner is much older, and she picks her up, takes her, puts her in a box, and sets her outside to be donated to Goodwill. And it's heartbreaking. And Randy Newman didn't sing the song because he didn't, like, it was Jesse's song. And so because it was Jesse's song, obviously he couldn't do that voice. So they had Sarah McLachlan do it. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. And I think better than You've Got a Friend of Me. But that's just me. So there you go. Randy Newman, Burn On and When She Loved Me. Those are the two tunes I'm going with today for musical chairs.
Yeah, that When She Loved Me really kind of, because Jessie, that was in Toy Story 2, right? So she was a kind of a newer character, and that song immediately, like, elevated her into, like, the core group from Toy Story 1 when you realize what her story was. Right. Woody's going through with Andy. It's kind of mirroring that whole thing. So yeah, that's a really powerful song. Great stuff, man.
Last thing I will say, if you want to explore Randy Newman outside of Disney and soundtracks, The Guardian, this is a fairly older article, but The Guardian did a ranking of their 20 best Randy Newman songs. There's only one Disney tune on there, and it is When She Loved Me. Most everything else from this is from the late 70s and 60s, or late 60s and early 70s. So definitely give it a look and check it out. So, all right. Thank you. I try. I do. I find this to be very important for us. So we're going to take our second commercial break. When we come back, Dave is going to hit you with his artist this week on Musical Chairs. So make sure you stick around and listen to that. I'm very excited to hear it. I know you will be too. You're listening to Musical Chairs here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
6, 7, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out the Chairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore. everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Musical Chairs here on the Chair Shot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com. Patrick O'Dowd, David Ungar, regaling you with all of our music deep cuts, not so deep cuts sometimes. Sometimes we just play the hits, and that's okay. Before I let Dave go, got to remind you all, if you love what we do, head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot and invest in one of our Chair Shot shirt designs. All kinds of great stuff out there. Helps us keep putting this stuff on your internet airwaves 7 days a week. All right, Dave, I've given you mine. I gave you Randy Newman. Sir, the floor is yours.
So last season, when you did the episode with Sly and the Family Stone, you wanted me to guess who you were talking about. And you were describing something, and I made a guess that turned out to be incorrect, but you sounded intrigued by the selection, by the guess that it was. And you were like, oh, that might be interesting to do one day. Well, today's the day, because once I made the guess and it wasn't correct, I jotted it down on my notes. Cause like you, I've kind of got a running list of what I want to cover. And so we're going way back with this one. We're going back to the late '60s, early '70s to talk about one of the most polarizing and iconic bands of all time with one of the most controversial lead singers of all time. Let's talk about the Doors. So, I think a lot of people, like, I was always like, the Doors were one of the first bands that I remember getting into. There were like six or seven that when I was young, I really remember like a few of these bands, like Rush was there, Van Halen, Jimi Hendrix, the Doors were one of them. And I think like Oliver Stone's movie, The Doors, really kind of reintroduced a lot of people to this band. Now, granted, Oliver Stone couldn't get out of his own damn way in that movie. But that doesn't take away from the fact that Val Kilmer delivered just an unbelievable performance as Jim Morrison, as close as you can get to the real thing by most accounts. You know, it did portray Jim as his tortured soul, which he was, but I think it kind of went over the top in a few places. But the historical accuracy of certain key moments of that in that movie and in the career of the Doors is on point. You know, the fact that Jim and Ray Manzarek met each other on a beach in Venice Beach. You know, we talked about Venice Beach last week with Suicidal Tendencies. Here we've come full circle a little bit. But they recognize each other from film school at UCLA. And, you know, Jim tells Ray, hey, I've been writing some poems. I've been writing some songs. And Ray's like, you've been writing songs, huh? He's like, yeah, a few. And he's like, well, why don't you sing me something? And Jim's like, no, I'm not a singer. He's like, come on, man. You know, and have you heard Bob Dylan? You know, all that kind of stuff. So Jim sings the beginning of Moonlight Drive and off they go. And they go through this amazing career where they just, I guess they redefine the rules of so many things that were going on in that time frame. I mean, you know, this is the age before. I mean, you've talked about how Freddie Mercury is the greatest frontman of all time. When the Doors were coming out, there weren't a ton of guys who you looked at as said frontman is like, wow, he's on a different level. And Jim Morrison was one of the first ones to really command that presence. And it took him a while to get to that point. He was kind of shy about being up there. But once he found his groove, it was all over. And then he got very emboldened. And you see this stuff in the movie that's very, very real. You know, the you know, getting kicked out of the Whiskey A Go Go, which is where they kind of made their mark. Because he did this profanity-laden version of the story of Oedipus in the end. And people at the Whiskey O'Go-Go said, no, get the hell out. It didn't matter because their first album sold a ridiculous amount of copies. You know, the first song was Break On Through, which was good, but it was, you know, of course, Light My Fire is the one that sets them afire, that sort of thing. But yeah, there's a, you know, I, out of all the bands I've ever thought about and covering, I don't know if there's ever been a band with a higher police presence at their live shows than the Doors. I mean, there were cops everywhere. Every time they show, and that incident in New Haven, Connecticut, where Jim does get sprayed in the face with mace and then takes a stage and ridicules the New Haven Police Department and is arrested and he gets acquitted. But there are other incidents that along the way, you know, the incident in Miami where simulating masturbation and getting charged with obscenity, and that charge actually stuck, but you know, it stuck, but big deal. But, you know, from the standpoint of Jim just being this, he was a tortured soul, as we all know. I mean, to die at the age of 27 under very dubious circumstances, you know, and he had a big issues with alcohol, drugs, that sort of thing. And, you know, I mean, the controversy for years was like, there was no autopsy performed. No one ever saw the body. Did he fake his death? if he did, it doesn't matter because he's probably gone by now anyhow. But yeah, they're just a band with great songs, lots of controversy about them. You know, I think the three surviving members tried to continue put out a couple of albums after Jim had died. They failed abysmally, and as they should, because you look, we've talked about it before, like on the show, people who can be replaceable, like when the drummer for the Foo Fighters passed away a couple years ago, Taylor Hawkins. Yeah, Taylor Hawkins. And we speculated, is he irreplaceable? Is he somebody you can replace should the band just stop? And we got the answer that no, they're not going to stop. But like, you don't replace a guy like Jim Morrison. It's just, or it's impossible. I mean, Queen, credit to them for going on without Freddie Mercury, because Adam Lambert is a different sort of experience. But, you know, you don't really get that with, how do you replace a guy like Jim Morrison? So they tried, they failed. They had a lot of creative differences later on in their musical career, as you see in the movie, and that's all accurate and that sort of thing. But yeah, they're just hit after hit after hit, and a very unique sound, that organ that Manzarek plays, that is in present in most of them. And Robbie Krieger is a horribly underrated drummer. John Densmore, very underrated drummer. So musically speaking, they're tremendous and have always been a huge influence on me from a music standpoint, even if I don't necessarily agree with Jim's approach to life, which was fun, but it was going to cut things short. So yeah, I know. I'll turn it over to you. I don't know what your thoughts are on the Doors. I mean, they're obviously a very well-known band.
Oh yeah, they're an iconic band. I think, you know, you can count on your hand the number of bands that can make it with an organ,
right?
Like playing an organ, an electric organ, the way Manzarek did. And yes, Jim Morrison as a personality and who he was, and you know, also the lyricist, right? Like of the Doors in most respects. That's a big difference when you lose that. Whereas, you know, you brought up Queen. One of the big differences between Queen and a lot of other bands that have lost front people or whatever, it wasn't just the voice, and Freddie's voice was all its own. It was also the other three members of the band were such accomplished musicians, and two of them could sing and did at concerts and shows without it always being Freddie. Freddie was just that huge personality that was going to be very difficult to replace, and they were fortunate to find a personality that could replace it. Jim Morrison is a vibe all his own that just, you can't, I don't know that he probably is and was obviously irreplaceable. So the other story you didn't tell, but the famous Ed Sullivan incident.
They
refused to change the lyrics for Light My Fire because, you know, Uncle Eddie didn't want drug references on his show, and they said, "Oh, we forgot," when everybody knew they didn't.
And so, and they think their response to them was like, "You'll never play Sullivan again," and they're like, "But we just did." And it's like for me, right, you can't unring the bell. They've already done it. They're already out there.
Well, they're already Hall of Fame. So yeah, excellent choice. Yeah, nothing wrong with the Doors. What are your tunes of choice this week?
So I got, you know, with the Doors, it's tough because so many of their songs are iconic. We've heard them, like People Are Strange and Lost Boy. I mean, that song made Lost Boys, you know, that sort of thing. But
they've been covered so much.
Yeah, that song's been covered ridiculously many times. But the two that I've got are, one of them's from the first album, and it's called The Crystal Ship. And I think, like, if you've heard it before, it's all about Jim and his singing ability, which I, you know, probably maybe underrated. I don't know. He had a very distinctive voice, and he could do a lot of things with it. But I think The Crystal Ship is very basic. It's this, you know, organ in the background with Ray Manzarek, and it's very melodic, and it's almost soothing in a way, which when you think about the Doors, like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But it's the, I think it's the third track on the first record. The other one I want to do is from Morrison Hotel, and it's called Peace Frog, which from the title of the song, you would never know it, but similar to like God Only Knows, like you talked about last week, once you hear the first few chords of it, you're like, oh yeah, okay, I recognize that from Waterboy, you know, that sort of thing.
It's an
excellent song, and Robbie Krieger has a tremendous guitar solo in the middle of that is probably one of the best guitar solos I think I've ever heard him do. And that's saying something when you think about some of the ones he's put down, but yeah, it's Crystal Ship and Peace Frog are the two that I'm picking for my deeper cuts this week.
There you go. Everybody's heard Light My Fire. Everybody's heard People Are Strange. So Yeah, go with something that maybe people haven't listened to. That's what we are trying to do here. All right, that's going to do it, though, Dave. We have covered it. We've had The Doors and Randy Newman, both musical careers that did briefly intersect, with Randy Newman starting in the late 60s, so in the back half of The Doors' career. Obviously, Randy continues to make music to this day. The Doors, you know, the passing of John Morrison, it's always terrible when this happens, but it does raise the iconography of a band when something like that tragically happens. Like it does make, and it, not to say that Jim Morrison wasn't a talent, but it does change the perspective of a band, because you never really got to see them completely. Like, you never got to see what they could have been. So they become the great mystery of what they could have been.
Like, had they toured in the '70s after some of the stuff was a little bit different? I mean, it could have been
right. Who knows where
bigger than they were, but yeah, he's what, one member of the 27 Club, a bunch of the people who all died at 27.
Right. Unfortunately. So, all right, folks, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Musical Chairs. Before we get out of here, Dave, tell everybody where to find you on the Chair Shot Radio Network and on the social.
You find me on X, or I guess now Elon's thinking about changing it back to Twitter. Who knows? At Attitude Ag, that is at Attitude AGG, Facebook.com/Attitude of Aggression, and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, on Instagram and Threads.
And you can follow me on the X Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. Sorry about the beep in the middle of that. That was my fault. You can catch me every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday here on the Chairshot Radio Network at thechairshot.com, talking music with Dave on Tuesdays, talking nerdy stuff with Dave on Mondays, sometimes talking wrestling with Greg DeMarco on Wednesdays. It's a lot of fun. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I think this is a great duo, Dave. I love what we put together here. So go out and check these artists out. Check out their music. Hopefully our selections are enough to prompt you to look at them further, because there's a ton to check out,
watch,
folks, and it's all worth
your
time.
If you have not seen The Doors, watch it. It's worth watching.
And remember, Oliver Stone is obsessed with Vietnam. That's all we have. Sorry, I couldn't help it.
It's true.
It is. He is very obsessed with Vietnam. All right. We got to get out of here. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you next. Well, we won't catch you next week. Next week's show is in question. We will find out. But when we come, when we're back, we will have more great musicians and artists for you to check out and listen to. And hopefully you do, because that's why you're here. All right. Well, this has been Musical Chairs here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake. There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake. There's an oil barge winding down the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake. There's an oil barge winding down the Cuyahoga River.
So the years went by, I stayed the same, but she began to drift away. I was left alone. Still I waited for the day when she'd say, I will always love you. Lonely and forgotten, never thought she'd look my way. And she smiled at me and held me just like she used to do, like she loved me when she loved me. When somebody loved me, everything was beautiful. Every hour
before you slip into unconsciousness. I like to have another kiss, another flashing chance at bliss, another kiss, another kiss. The days are bright and filled with pain. Enclose me in your gentle rain. The time you ran was
sadness.